Second hour, Darren Donican Chase here on this Friday and this beautiful day here in Nashville, Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's bring in former kicker. Now he's a part of CBS's broadcast team. He was doing the Titans game in the booth on Tuesday night when the Titans took on the Buffalo Bills at Nissan Stadium, and he'll be back here in our fine city again this week. He'll be a part of the broadcast for the Titans and the Texans. Greg Gumbel and Rich Gannon also, they'll be in the booth, and Jay will be working the sidelines for this game. He now joins us, Jay Feely on the line. Jay, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. How are you liking this role? We talked about it on Wednesday, and one, we talked a lot about the game and the wow, I can't believe the Titans just did that to Buffalo, considering all the circumstances. But two, we brought up your guys' work. We've sometimes get kind of the same crews, I feel like, for Titans games, and it was refreshing to see some new voices and some new faces. And how are you liking this role, CBS?
Well, you know, it's been a lot of fun. This is actually my sixth year doing games with them. So it's been a while. I did college games for the first 4 years and did some NFL, mostly on the sidelines. And then, you know, last year we kind of created a role where, all right, I'll be on the sidelines and be an analyst on the sidelines, and then I'll be up in the booth for, you know, the games when we get six or seven games on CBS. So it's fun. I really enjoy it. I like being in the meetings. You know, unfortunately this year we only get to do the Zoom calls, so it's a little different. It's not quite as good. But when you get to sit in there with coaches, coordinators, you get to walk through different ways that people create culture, different ways that coaches believe in going about trying to create the best game plans. You know, it's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, and you guys talked about that a lot during the broadcast, and I always think that is interesting, you know, what a coach or players will tell you. Kind of you get to learn a little bit more about the dynamic in the room, which you understand. And I thought it was interesting you talking about Koskowski's, you know, struggles early on, and boy, it was horrific struggles in that first game. And we sat here the next day, even after a win over the Broncos, going, holy crap, we're going to go through this again, the kicking woes with this team. They were able to overcome it last year and get to the AFC Championship game, and they never even attempted field goals, and this is what it's going to be this year. But just talk about that mentality. You lived life in the NFL in that world, and how he bounced back and where he is today with the Titans.
Well, first, I was shocked that he had as bad a game as he had, because he's never had a game like that in his career. You know, you always have some bad games, but he's never had a really bad game. Most kickers have. You know, and Steven's been one of the best kickers literally in the history of the NFL. He's top five maybe in the history of kickers in the NFL when you look at his body of work and what he's done, big games, kicking in Super Bowls, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so I wasn't the least bit surprised that he was able to overcome it, that it didn't deter him, that he was able to fix it, you know, because this is a guy who has kicked at an incredibly high level, almost 90% for his career. And he went through a surgery last year. He didn't get to finish his season. He comes back. He's here for 1 week. Has no preseason games, isn't able to actually go out and kick in a game after having, you know, big hip surgery. And he goes out and he struggles, you know, and that's, it wasn't surprising that he struggled. It was surprising that he struggled as bad as he did, but I wasn't surprised at all that he's able to overcome it and continue to kick as well as he has since that game.
I did tell a story on Wednesday, and you'll never remember this conversation, but I did. I was out in Glendale, Arizona, covering the Super Bowl in 07. It was the Patriots and the Giants, and I'm working Radio Row out there, and I just happened to run into you. I think you were working Radio Row that day. I don't remember if you were, you know, you were hawking a product or what you were doing, but you were nice enough to sit down with me, and we had a great conversation. And at the time, you were in the 06 season, you were kicking for the Giants, and I brought up that Giants game here in Nashville where you guys were up 21-0, and we had a good time with that. I'll always remember that conversation.
That was the
Kiwanuka.
Yeah, exactly.
The 21-0 lead, and then Vince Young's rookie year, and
they came back. You know, those Giants team is interesting, because then they go on, you know, obviously they beat the Giants in the Super Bowl, and that's a team that, you know, I think they were on the precipice of that season. They started 0-2. And they were literally on the precipice of collapsing, you know, just imploding. And Tom Coughlin, to his credit, you know, made some changes and stopped being such of a dictator and opened up to those players. And that made a huge difference. And they went on an incredible run and then beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Tell us what you see now that you got a good look, you know, up close and personal on Tuesday, and now you'll be back at it on Sunday. When you look at this Titans team, you see what?
Well, the thing that surprised me most was what they did defensively, because Josh Allen had looked so good in those first four games, and the Bills' offense had been dialed in, and they really hadn't had a problem with any team so far. You know, and they had beaten a good team in the Rams and a good team in the Raiders, and they did a really good job, you know, playing a lot of zone, making Josh Allen uncomfortable, not knowing where to go with the ball, confusing him with looks post-snap. And, you know, that's something that you hadn't seen yet. And that was, you know, they're doing it without some of their best players defensively. They don't have their best corner. You don't have your best interior defensive lineman. So, you know, I was really impressed. The entire, you know, and people were like, it was funny because, you know, there was a lot of stuff written about, well, he was too effusive in his praise about the Titans. And, you know, what Roger Goodell said to me, I thought was very telling before the game. You know, when he said no one on the Titans willingly broke protocol. You know, that should have said a lot to the rest of the league and the fans around the league, that I don't believe that they're going to have penalties for the Titans. And the fact that they played the game after not practicing for 2 weeks, you know how hard it is, you know, to, as a quarterback, to go out there to not practice, to not throw, and you got receivers, two of your best receivers aren't playing, you got guys coming up from the practice squad that you're throwing to, and, you know, that's a difficult situation. They went out there, and they played almost flawlessly.
Jay Feely is with us from CBS Sports. And, Jay, on that subject, you were the one that really we got the information from for the first time about Roger Goodell's comments. Were you surprised at that? Just because we've gone through it day by day here, just for perspective from your end, right? Every day it looked like the walls were closing in. We were trying to figure out the best information as best we could, but we could only used what we had, but it seemed like the further away you went from Nashville, the perception was, boy, they're going to drop the hammer. So how surprised were you to hear Roger Goodell's comments?
Well, I was somewhat surprised because I just read what everybody else read.
Right.
You know, I didn't have any inside information. I didn't know what was going on inside the facility or, you know, what protocols were broke or not. I think when it comes to this, we have to understand, though, that if you have an outbreak on a team, it's not necessarily that team's fault, you know, and there's going to be times where protocols aren't followed to the law on every team, not just, you know, on that Titans team. I'm talking every team. And that's happened. You know, teams have broken protocols and the NFL knows that. And I think they're not trying necessarily to do it, but it happens. And so, I don't know, this whole thing, you know, you're trying to play a season while dealing with a pandemic that no one has real answers for what the best thing to do is. It's been the whole case in our country since March. You know, it changes daily and weekly and monthly. So, you know, I think teams are just trying to do the best that they can do to handle it, you know, however they can.
I want to ask you one more thing on the kicker front. You were talking about Steven Guskowski's ability to overcome the hurdles he did. I would think that is such a huge ability that a kicker has to have. Because everybody says, hey, you have to have a short memory. You have to worry about the next kick. But there may not be a tougher person that has to go through that than a kicker. How did you try to overcome? Like, we're thinking about the first game. It's not been emphasized well, but that was just a remarkable turnaround that he had. So what about the mental side? How did you practice doing that when you were kicking?
Well, I think it's similar. Kicking and closing in baseball are similar to each other. You know, because a lot of the times you're on the sidelines, you're not involved a lot in the game until they need you the most. And then you have to step in there and you have to, a lot of times, win a game or lose a game for your team. You know, and as a closer, they come in, they got a lead, you give up a lead, you know, and everyone's looking at you. And that's how the kicking position is. And you know what it's like. You go in on Monday morning after you lost a game and it's brutal in a team facility and everybody's down, no one's talking. And when you had a kick to win that game, and you missed it, there's nothing worse. Like, you're walking around and you're knowing, like, everyone would be happy in here and joyful if I had just made my kick and done my job. And you have to be able to put that aside. And the biggest thing is you can't let your mind wander. You can't think about the implications of what you're doing while you're doing it. You can't think about your past failures. You can't think about the fact that if I miss this kick, I might lose my job. And if I lose my job, we might have to sell our house. My kids might have to pull them out of school and move them to a different school. Like, those are all realities for a kicker every single day when you know your job's on the line, especially now because teams are so quick to pull the trigger and to bring somebody else in. And you guys know that better than anybody, you know, with what you guys went through last year at the kicking position. So not allowing your mind to wander and think about those things, especially while you're out there on the field, I think that's probably the biggest thing that a kicker needs to be good at.
Jay Feely is with us, analyst for CBS Sports. He'll be a part of the broadcast for the Titans and the Texans on Sunday. So, Jay, with the Houston Texans, we know their schedule was brutal to start with, but clearly things were not going right behind the scenes. We know some of the moves that the GM, Bill O'Brien, made that could have cost head coach Bill O'Brien. But why do you believe that Romeo Crennel is the right guy to try and right this ship right now as the interim?
Well, you know, it certainly was tough when you start with the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Steelers. You know, it can't get much harder than that. You know, and you play games that you had opportunities in, you didn't make plays. And sometimes when you make a change at the top and you make a change at the head coach and somebody else comes in, Romeo is a pretty mild-mannered guy. He's the opposite of Bill O'Brien. You know, and sometimes that's what's needed, you know, and he's able to go in there and he's able to rally the guys and they know that that he cares about them, that he loves them. And I think that's probably what they needed at this moment. So it's a talented team that got rid of one of their best players in DeAndre Hopkins, and I'm sure that had residual impact on that team. You know, making that move from a player's perspective, sitting in that locker room, it's hard to justify. It's hard to look at that and say, hey, that made us better as a team. You know what I mean? And you're sitting there, and anytime you have issues offensively, not being able to go down the field, throw the ball, you're thinking, well, yeah, if we had our best receiver back in this team, that would probably help us a lot. And I think that when you make a move like that as a head coach and as a GM, especially when it's one and the same, it's hard to overcome that. If you don't start out fast, it's really easy for those players in the locker room and the fans outside to point back to that move.
What's been your impressions overall in now 2+ years with Mike Vrabel as the head coach of the Titans? I think we would all agree that how he had his team ready to play Tuesday night, given the circumstances, was a pretty good job on his part. But what have you seen from your perspective?
Well, I've always been impressed with Mike. I've known him for over 20 years. You know, we were on the executive committee with the NFLPA together, and he hasn't changed. You know, who he is, his persona, the way he carries himself, it hasn't changed one bit from when he was a player, when he was on the executive committee, to when he became an assistant coach, to now as a head coach. You know, he's very transparent about who he is. You have to know that as a player, you got to go to work. You better be ready. You better know your responsibilities. You know, he doesn't want any BS. He wants you to go in there. He wants you to do your job. He doesn't want any excuses. You know, and I kind of brought up when I went back in my notes, I love to go back and look at, you know, the last couple of and what players said and how it changes. And we looked at, I looked at what Tannehill said last year in the playoffs. He's talking about Vrabel. You know, I thought it was interesting. You know, he said that he didn't know him really well before he got on the team, and that Mike Vrabel commands the room really well. He lays out expectations and he holds the guys accountable. You know, to me, that's a perfect description of who Mike Vrabel is. There's not a whole lot of fluff. You know, there's not a whole lot of, you know, he's not trying to be anybody's friend. He's not trying to do, but he's going to be very clear about what he wants, what he expects, and what he thinks that you should do. And if you can't do that, he's going to get somebody else.
Now, Jay, before we let you go, I know when Elijah, our producer, was setting this up, he sent you his location. Are you guys hanging out at some point before
I think he's trying to get me to come hang out. You know, I stayed here in Nashville all week. You know, we did the game Tuesday, so there's no reason to fly home and fly back. So I just hung out here and got a little golf in. So I don't know. Maybe he wanted to hang out with me. I'm not sure.
His house is haunted. You don't want to go there. He's got ghosts.
It's more of a tourist attraction than anything at this point.
I did tell him I was a little busy. I'm sorry I couldn't hang out, Elijah.
That's hilarious. Hey, Jay, really appreciate the visit. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, bro. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, that is Jay Feely. He will be on the sidelines for CBS, Titans and Texans, Sunday at noon. We will come back. More on the other side on this Friday. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Matt Jones, at the bottom of the hour, we'll learn a little bit more about this Kentucky team that will be in Knoxville on Saturday morning. Well, it'll be Saturday at noon their time. Saturday morning, 11 o'clock kickoff our time on SEC Network. Vols and Wildcats. Don't forget Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out on Titans game days. Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown. They've got great beer specials, including $1 off Yazoo and Happ & Harry's draft beers, plus Happ & Harry bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best pregame show. Of course, the Corner Pub downtown will be the location on Sunday from 9:30 until 11:30 a.m. That'll lead you up to Titans-Texans kickoff. And of course, that pregame show will feature Jared Stillman, the GM, Floyd Reese, who joined us yesterday on the program, and also forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, who also joined us yesterday and took his medicine in silly underdog picks. And that's all brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers. Laura Rutledge, by the way, that little promo, she is, I'll tell you what, she is moving up the ranks at ESPN. Has anybody noticed?
Yeah, I've noticed. She's on everything.
It's kind of hard not to, right? Yeah.
She's on Get Up. She's on NFL
Live.
NFL Live. They have like a bunch of NFL shows. NFL Live. She still does some stuff for SEC Network. I mean, she's everywhere. And she's good. She's earned it. We've had several conversations with her over the years. And
Uh-oh. Speaking of silly underdog picks, breaking news sounder, Elijah. Commish, we're going to need you to make a ruling. This is the first time this has happened.
Oh, do we have a game that's been picked that got canceled?
Yep.
Or postponed?
Postponed. Southern Miss UTEP, postponed. Postponed due to COVID-19.
Oh,
that
boy.
Would be Kelly Holcomb's pick. He had UTEP plus 6.5.
Wow.
So
what are you
going
to do, Commish?
Well, we have, I would say, two options. One option would be whenever that game is played, if it's played, you would get that. Or allow him to make a second pick and just scratch it.
And has to take whatever's left, obviously.
Of course, yes.
So is that something that needs to be asked of him, what he wants to do? Is that his choice or your choice?
Faced with the decisions that we've all had to face in different walks of life because of this situation. You have to make decisions that there is no precedent for. So I would give him the choice. I would guess that it's not 100% certain that game will be made up. I think we all hope that these games that get pushed to second week of December or whenever it is will be made up, but we still don't know what the coming weeks will hold for us. As we've seen, I think this week it's been eye-opening. It's been the challenges that are coming up, popping up around our country, right? With not just the games that we cover, but, you know, keeping everybody in school, and as schools get back in there, as the weather gets colder, there's a lot of variables here and challenges ahead. So my thought is give Kelly the choice, but, you know, obviously the easy choice is just to pick another game.
My vote is that he just loses out.
Just gets a zero?
Yep. That's my vote. Just gets
of course
X,
it is.
X marks the spot. That's
it gets
my
the
game.
Points if the game is played?
No, just it's a
well, this is zero. You're just going to be week. That guy.
It's just this week, and he picked a game, and that's it.
Now let me ask. Let me ask Willie.
What's wrong with that?
Do we think that if Darren is in this position, that he feels the same way?
It's a fair question, Darren. Do you have an answer?
If I'm in Kelly's shoes, I would do the right thing as the leader in the clubhouse and say I forfeit my pick. That's the right thing to do. He needs to forfeit his pick.
There is a phrase that comes to mind that I want to say, but it is not FCC compliant. But as somebody you guys worked with for a long time used to say, that's a load of bull.
Yeah. Maybe so. But you guys can't see me, so I can just sell it however I want.
Yeah, I can see that cat ate the canary look on your face.
Of course, we need to inform Mr. Cliff McCardle from our promotion staff as well, yeah, because we have our online contest will be affected by this as well. So,
do we think the public is, or the listeners are listening to Kelly's picks? Do you think anybody?
I mean, I would. He's been on fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been pretty good lately.
Yep. So that game has been canceled. It looks like the Falcons had their facility shut down yesterday, but they are back open. So I guess Falcons-Vikings, as of right now, is on.
Good to go. And, of course, the Colts had a very strange morning where they woke up. They thought they had several people test positive, only to find that all of them were false positives. Mm-hmm. That's not the first time that type of thing has happened.
Nope.
Happened once in a large scale in the preseason, right before everybody started playing games. But, wow, what a turn of events there. What a relief.
Which has to make the Big Ten and the Pac-12, if they have any brains whatsoever, they have to be in a room coming up with plans. Like, their schedule is set up to go every single week. Like, come on. Like, you have to allow, like, college, right? The playoffs, they have to, there's no way I think they're going to be able to have this schedule the way that it is, right? I mean, they're going to have wiggle room, don't you think?
Absolutely.
They're not going to be able to get all this. You can't have the Big Ten. Because I'll tell you this right now, from what we've seen, and look, there's still a long ways to go. I'm just telling you, just talent-wise, Clemson obviously looks loaded. But the SEC, I know Alabama is Alabama, and they'll just get better. Like, their defense will get better. Georgia, their defense is good. Their offense is, I mean, their defense is really good. Excuse me. Let me take that back. Their defense is really good. Their offense is good, and it'll probably get better as well. There just doesn't look like any juggernauts out there, right? Ohio State may be that team. Like, they're loaded. Their roster is loaded with talent. They should walk away with the Big Ten title. It should be easy peasy. They're that good.
But then again,
but you can't have them 7-0, right? You can't. How can you put them in at 7? They play 7 games you try to keep to the schedule.
Well, also, I was listening to Trevor Maddich with Jared and the GM yesterday. He brought this up. The SEC started early enough so that if a game is postponed, which 2 of them are this weekend, you at least have the ability to schedule it for December 12th. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 do not have that. If there is a game that's postponed, which there will be, they can't make it up. There's not enough time on the calendar to do it. So you might have a 6-0 Ohio State.
But that's what I'm saying. They can't. Like, they're going to have to do this, right? They're going to have to allow flexibility in the schedule. They're just going to have to. How can you possibly put in a team with 6 games under their belt over somebody else, let's say, who's 8-2?
I think it could be a big challenge to try to determine strength of schedule. Certainly, you know, remember, there are coaches that are put on there to evaluate teams, their talent. And so if it's 6-0 and it's a very powerful 6-0 and there's some other teams that do well in the league, then I think you certainly have to consider a 6-0. What's really interesting is there is a perception that we have of Alabama, Ohio State, and other usual suspects. Georgia, at this point, they've been good enough long enough. That counts for something, even if it's just subconscious in your mind, right? You see them differently if you're human than you do an upstart who comes in. I mean, pick a program, whether it's Mississippi State or Illinois, if they were to have a great run. Right, there's just a perception of, well, everybody that covers this sport doesn't think they're as good. They haven't had as many recruiting classes. But that's an age-old philosophical discussion, too, of, you know, what do our eyeballs say? What do the data say? And, you know, who deserves to be in those 4 positions? This might be as tricky as any that they've ever had. And there's been some tricky runs before.
I think we just may have to accept the fact that, you know, it's just going to be incomplete. The champion, whoever the champion is, I mean, whether you want to talk asterisks or what have you, I mean, this is just not going to be a normal season. You may have the eventual champion play less games than some of the teams they beat, and everybody's just going to have to understand that that's a part of it. And I don't agree with it. I think that you figure out how to play the same number of games, but it may just not be possible. So if that's what everybody is going to agree to and understand, then you just have to go with it.
I mean, if Georgia beats Alabama on Saturday, and then Alabama turns around and beats Georgia in the SEC championship game, and they both have the one hiccup against each other, and USC goes 6-0, you're putting in a 6-0 USC team, and there's six wins against Pac-12 schools over Georgia or Alabama? Really?
Yeah. I mean, and I disagree with that.
I wonder how deep we'll go with the two lost teams, you know, because as you said, there's three top five teams. Floyd made this point yesterday with Trevor. He said, I kind of watched Georgia and Alabama and Florida. These are all top five teams. And I'm like, eh, eh. You know, they didn't look great, right? Georgia looked very poor for a half, then cranked it up. Florida had all kinds of trouble on defense, couldn't win. And, you know, of course, you're playing at Texas A&M. That's not an easy place to win. So how do you judge that? And, of course, Alabama could not stop Ole Miss. Ole Miss almost pitched the perfect game on offense and gave up the perfect game on defense, right? It was one of those games. I thought every team was going to score a touchdown every time they had the ball. For a while, it seemed like that was what was happening. But Alabama could not stop them.
Who's looked great?
That's what I'm saying. Who else would you put in there? That's the question.
Clemson, but Clemson's played nobody. Right? Yeah. I mean, Miami, yeah, that's an impressive. But, I mean, look, Miami, they were top 10 team. I mean,
and you're not going to have
better.
That reference. You're not going to have those reference points of, well, Miami did go to this SEC school and win. You're not going to have those this year.
Nope. No,
that makes it more difficult.
You're just going to have to watch the games. I mean, the eye test is whether it's, you know, how accurate the eye test is. That's what you're going to have to look at, because you're going to have mismatches on records and it's conference only. So you're just going to have to do the best you can from the eye test point of view. And it goes back to what I just said. Everybody's going to have to accept that whether they want to or not, if you want to have a playoff and a champion and finish the season. I just think that's kind of where they're at. But
I don't think they would put in an undefeated 6-0 or 7-0 Pac-12 team over Georgia and Alabama with a loss. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And if they did, that, I mean.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah. I was trying to think of the best way to put it, but yeah. Because you can't definitively say that a 6-0, 7-0 Pac-12 team is better than a 1 or maybe even a 2 loss SEC team. You can't say that. You got to look at strength of schedule. If it's Alabama and Georgia especially, but Florida too. I mean, Florida can be factored in there. So, you know, now depending, you do play the game of, okay, well, what is Texas A&M? Or what's the rest of their schedule look like? What's the rest of their season look like? That factors in. But to your point, the example you use of if Georgia wins and then Alabama turns around and beats them in the SEC championship game, they both need to be in.
Right, because what's the easiest thing? If it played out the way that I just threw it out there, what is the easiest comeback for Alabama to make their case on
their
champion. One loss? No. About their one loss. What's the easiest comeback in the world to explain away their one loss?
They didn't have their coach.
Didn't have the best coach in college football on the sidelines. What do you mean? He wasn't coaching our team.
Also, do you?
And they're the SEC champion. So, I mean, that's another part. If Alabama wins in the SEC title game, like, well, we won the championship.
I wonder if it would get to two losses for somebody. I think that scenario could happen. Let's say that Georgia somehow beats Alabama twice this weekend in a great game that goes down to the wire, and Alabama comes out of there saying, wow, great game. We lost. It was a bummer. We didn't have our coach. And then they play another really exciting game in the SEC championship game where you're saying these two teams are great. This game could have gone either way. So one team beat the other twice, but Alabama wins all the rest of their games. I would have to say, depending on what happens elsewhere, they'd be in the mix. They could be.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Can you imagine if teams played three times in 1 year?
That's probably the better example because you're right, Chase. The winner's going to get in.
Yeah.
So there's no way to really pose it without, I guess, unless Alabama won this game, then I don't know what Georgia's excuse what their comeback is, and then they turn around and they beat them in the championship game. I don't know how you could leave out one of those two teams when you look around and you go, who's really good? And I know we need to see the other conferences play out, but, I mean, it's like, who's really – you're not taking a Big 12 team.
Right.
Clemson looks like the only chance in the ACC. What do you do with Notre Dame? Clemson and Notre Dame will play each other.
Well, Notre Dame is, to my knowledge, considered – or how I understand it, is considered a member of the ACC and is eligible for the ACC title game. So, I mean, that – you got to. I guess you have to look at them as an ACC member right now. So that
and how
could
much
factor
does
in.
The Notre Dame baggage factor in with them, right?
Yeah.
Depending on how that game with Clemson goes, because you know they get banged on a lot. Like, quit putting Notre Dame in these big games because look what happens when they go up against the big boys. They get creamed, right?
Yeah.
That narrative is out there. Whether it's fair or unfair, it's out there.
But if they beat Clemson. And Clemson's only loss is...
But that's different. I'm saying, what if that is their only loss? What do you do with a one-loss Notre Dame team?
See, that's why I go back to the reputation of some of these teams and some of the leagues, right? The perception of the SEC is that it's the best most years. But they can't prove it this year because they don't play anybody in other leagues. And other leagues that are perceived to be inferior can't do anything to prove otherwise. So does that have a fallback, right? Do people fall back on that committee saying, well, you know, we think the SEC is the best. They've been the best most years. How can you know when they haven't had any leagues, no interleague games? It adds a layer of complication, in my opinion, if you're really trying to do it. Especially if you have teams with different amounts of games played, different circumstances, league champions, two losses, one loss. You know, there's a lot of things that could happen.
Yeah, in Notre Dame, just back to that for a second, that's a home game against Clemson, and then they're on the road at North Carolina, which right now, I mean, North Carolina is the fifth-ranked team. Now, who's to say they're going to be there? They probably won't be by the time they play. But how much of a factor are they going to look at home and away? You know, how much are they going to look at rivalry games? You know, is that – like the Iron Bowl, when talking about Alabama, I mean, how much does that factor into their process of where to put a team? You know, is it any different than it would be in a normal year? That's another part of it that they got to figure out.
I mean, Clemson doesn't even play North Carolina, which is a joke.
Oh, do they not? Yeah, that is weird.
They don't even play each other.
Would they play in a championship game potentially?
Because
didn't some leagues get rid of divisions?
Yeah, I mean,
for this year,
the ACC is one of them. It's just the top two teams,
so they could play in a championship game. So that would tell you something.
They don't have the division. They don't have them split up,
which I prefer that.
Yeah. All right, now I have a question for you guys. Do you think by the time the ball is kicked off on Saturday, that Nick Saban will find a way to have the rule changed or something to have him be involved in the game? Assuming he's still, you know, he hasn't tested negative enough times to get through that and be allowed on the sideline, if he's still in the status of he's positive, he's asymptomatic, he feels great, right now the rule is he cannot be involved during the game. Do you think that he will get that changed or amended somehow by the time the ball is kicked off on Saturday? Because everything he says is, we're going to see what can be done.
Good question.
I don't. He's given it the, I really don't understand the rule. We're going to see what can be done. And to be honest, I think we all kind of say, well, yeah, what is the advantage What's wrong with him being able to weigh in from some remote area if you can technologically do it and have a say in the game? You know, it's up to him to delegate whatever he wants to delegate. But why does he have to shut down and not communicate with anybody? Is that really the rule that you want?
If there's anyone that can get something like that changed, it's going to be him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he's got some weight.
I'm doing great. I just want to coach on Saturday. I'm doing great.
That's why I asked the question. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion in the next 24 hours about what the right thing is to do. Because this is probably not the last coach that's going to be in this position. Right? There will be another coach that tests positive.
Sure.
Now, Mike Norvell was.
If he's sick.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. If he's sick, that's, you know, during the game, that's a different story. He doesn't need to be coaching if he's sick. But if you're asymptomatic positive, which certainly can happen, then should you be able to be tapped in communications-wise from a remote siding, a remote setting during the game? Right now, the answer is no.
Well,
right?
If there's they deemed that before. Put it to the test, it's going to be Nick Saban.
Well, yeah. he's doing it. You know, he is. He's said as much that he's going to see what can be done.
So to answer your question,
I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with being able to.
I'm going to communicate
during a game.
I'm going to have to stick with what I've said all along, all week, even though Paul Feinbaum called me crazy.
They're playing the game, Darren. I don't know. I still don't know where you're coming from on that. They are going to play. But the question
is... Well, then I guess then if they're playing the game, then what did I say? Then he's going to be involved in the game somehow, whether he's there or he's remote. You know, he's doing it remotely. As like I said, I have to stick with what I said earlier in the week.
But
he's either they're not going to... If he has no involvement, if they're not going to allow him to be a part of it at all, then how can you really do this game? This is the game of the year right now to this point.
Right. I don't know.
So I think he's going to find a way to be a part of the game. Yes.
And I haven't read enough, I guess, as to what... Because when we asked Paul Feinbaum about it, he wasn't sure about the rule. We brought up the Hugh Freeze reference and the game that he was able to... So I don't know where they arrived at the rule this year of a coach can't, you know, 90 minutes before you got to check out. You can't be involved. So what's the advantage? Why did they put the rule in to begin with? Is my question. I guess I don't understand it fully.
Yeah, I don't either.
Because I don't really understand what's unfair about a coach being able to communicate with his team remotely during the game. Under the circumstances.
I'm in 100% agreement with you. I don't know. Field Yates.
If somebody can set us straight, then by all means, 737-1025. I want to learn because I don't know.
Field Yates is reporting the Patriots are going to be canceling practice today after a positive test, per source. This is their second test. They are waiting to confirm. There's also a second test they're waiting to confirm if it's positive. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. O'clock Central Time tomorrow. We'll be kicking off in Knoxville back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Kentucky and Tennessee, that game will be a part of our pick six in the final hour of the program. Kentucky Sports Radio, Matt Jones is on the line with us. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I'll tell you what, I was blown away by the stat on Mike Leach. I cannot believe that was the first time he had ever been shut out with an offensive touchdown since he's been running a program. I guess the easy question is, how in the world did Kentucky pull that off? I mean, this is not a murderer's row defense. How did they just completely shut down the Bulldogs?
Well, I mean, it's an amazing stat. It's also a little misleading. I mean, they had six interceptions, so that helped a lot.
It does, yes.
And they and Mississippi State got inside the 40 four times and got no points. So, you know, I think the big thing that happened was Kentucky made the decision, and this is going to be interesting to watch as Mississippi State goes on through the rest of the season. Kentucky made the decision that they were going to basically do the exact same thing Arkansas did in the last week, which was play zone, drop eight guys back, and say either beat us with your athletes after the catch, or we're just going to shut you down and keep the passes in front of us. And it worked. I mean, Mississippi State completed 45 passes. They ran 84 plays. So, I mean, they offensively, they didn't get shut down, but they just couldn't get the plays that were necessary to score points. And I think that's what teams are going to keep doing to Mississippi State. I mean, the problem that LSU has, they tried to play a man, and Mississippi State just went over the top. Arkansas and Kentucky have shown that's not how to play them, and I think you'll see more teams do that. So I think Kentucky's defense is good. It's better than it looked in week one and two, but I don't think it's as good as that stat would lead you to believe.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. That's what surprised me, and they've had better defenses, as you know, in the past, and for them to do that. But you're right, yeah. Opportunistic may have played a big factor in that too with six picks. I wanted to ask you what do you think of Terry? Just your overall thoughts on Terry Wilson as their quarterback.
Well, I think Terry Wilson is a very good quarterback that is not great, but is very good, but is dependent on – he's got to have help. I mean, you know, he is not – Kentucky, over the years, we've seen what a great quarterback looks like. You know, they had Tim Couch, they had Andre Woodson, Jared Lorenzen, et cetera. Terry's not a great quarterback, but you can win with him. I mean, they went 10-2 with him just 2 years ago – or, excuse me, 10-3. So – you can win with Terry, but he's got to have help. And the problem he has this year is his receiving core has been dreadful. I mean, they can't get open. When they get open, they drop the passes. The offensive line, which is, I think, the strength of the team, had played really well in weeks one and two, but was dreadful in week three. So, you know, I know what you get with Terry. You get a solid game, but you don't get a game that's going to go, you know, win you the game. But he also, let me just say, doesn't lose you the game. So it's going to be about the rest of your team. And when Kentucky, the rest of their team has played well, they played really well against Auburn. They could have won that game. They didn't, but they two plays go differently. They win. I did not think they played well against Ole Miss. And then I thought they played pretty well against Mississippi State, certainly on defense.
What do they have, Matt, behind him? I mean, Mark Stoops, I mean, do they have some, you know, young?
Well, they have a lot of they got stuff for the future. I mean, okay. Joey Gatewood, the transfer from Auburn, I think
right.
is the guy. Everybody, and I think you'll see him a little bit against Tennessee. I think he'll probably have one or two series that they run with him. And then they have a freshman named Bo Allen, who's one of the highest recruited guys they've had in a while. So I think they feel good about the future. I don't think they think either of those guys – see, here, you have to understand, Mark Stoops is old school. He believes you win in the SEC by having great teams at the line of scrimmage and not screwing up. It's kind of an old school mentality. And I didn't think you could win like that at Kentucky. I just didn't think that Kentucky produced enough talent to do that. But he's done it. But that mindset, I think they just think, look, our defense and our running backs are good enough. I just need my quarterback not to screw up. And I honestly think they think, Mark Stoops thinks, Terry Wilson won't screw up as much as these young guys will. So let me get through this year with him, and then we pass the torch.
Interesting. So what was the narrative? What were you guys talking about? There was a lot of discussion here on why they had not, you know, approved Cade Mays. You guys were talking the same thing about Gatewood. What do you make of why it took so long?
On this, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I think it's very simple. I think there's a rule that says that the SEC, you can't transfer immediately in conference and play. I think the SEC teams involved, Kentucky and Auburn specifically, agreed that they would sort of together decide that it would be okay and ask the SEC to do it. But they made a gentleman's agreement that it wouldn't happen until after the Kentucky-Auburn game because Auburn didn't want Joey Gatewood playing against Kentucky. We heard about it in the weeks leading up to the game. The game happened. As soon as the game was over, they made both those dudes eligible. Now, you're telling me that's a coincidence?
I don't know.
They had 6 months to approve it. What could they have found out in the 2 days after the Kentucky-Auburn game that made it make sense?
But was he really going to play?
No, he wasn't. But I think at the time that the agreement was made, they didn't know if Terry Wilson would be 100% healthy or not.
Okay.
So, in my opinion, there is no logical scenario where the SEC knew about these transfers for 6 months, does nothing, and then makes the decision after week one. What is that? Like, what would the scenario be where that would make sense?
Well, there's a lot of things that don't make sense in college football.
I know, but here's what does make sense. Kentucky played Auburn in week one, and they said, let's get through that game, and then we'll say yes. And that's what I think happened. And then I think Cade Mays was kind of along for the ride of the because you couldn't approve Cade Mays and not approve Joey Gatewood.
Right.
So I think you had to wait until after week one, and I think that's what happened. And nobody's ever going to convince me otherwise because nothing else makes sense.
We're talking to Matt Jones, creator of Kentucky Sports Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at KY Sports Radio. And Matt, I got to say, I got a great laugh out of your poll question on Twitter. Will you cheer for Rick Pitino at Iona? I can go back. I grew up in New York. I have been to a game at Iona. I was really curious about your audience's answer. Without looking, I would have thought that more people might have said, you know, who cares? It's Iona. I mean, it'd be nice. Overwhelming. 70-30 almost. No. They're not rooting for Ricky P.
You can never underestimate the amount our fan base hates Rick Pitino. what do they say? There's no worse hate than a lover scorned, that's not what the saying is, but it's something to that.
I know what you mean, yes.
And that's what it is. Good grief, this woman just about jumped in front of me while I was driving. Sorry about that. But with Rick Pitino, it wasn't just that he left. Coaches leave, and he left for the Celtics. Nobody cares. It's that he went to Louisville with his next job. He could have taken the Michigan job. He chose Louisville. Like, that's fine, but you just chose our biggest rival. And then while he was there, he was constantly taking shots at Kentucky, including in his final appearance in Rupp Arena. As he was walking off the court, he flipped the crowd off. So, you know, people just – they remember that stuff, and they're like, Rick – You're done. We don't like you. Now, I have to tell you, I thought it would be closer to 50-50. But Rick Pitino has a way of just not ever making you feel sorry for him. You know, America loves a good redemption story.
Right.
But Rick Pitino just doesn't. And I don't mean to be political, but it's a little bit like Donald Trump. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, nobody feels sorry for Donald Trump. Nobody feels sorry for Rick Pitino. He just has a personality that no one is ever going to be like, oh, poor Rick Pitino. And I think that's why ultimately it was 70-30.
Oh, that was
good
stuff.
Things we've never heard. Poor Rick Pitino.
All right, Matt.
People just don't feel that way. He's too arrogant. And he's one. So I do think, by the way, though, once he starts coaching there and he's not taking shots at Kentucky every day, our fan base will mellow on him a little bit.
I think that's – we'll see. I guess we'll have to keep an eye on that one for sure. But, Matt, back to the game. What is your perception of Tennessee and where they sit right now? Because it was so interesting to follow the narrative of, hey, they won these games 8 in a row. They hadn't really beaten anybody. Now here's the litmus test against Georgia, and they fell apart in the second half. So how beatable is Tennessee in your mind?
Well, I mean, if you just look, if the names on the jersey were not Kentucky and Tennessee, I would say Kentucky could win the game. But we are spooked from having lost 35 of the last 37 times. So because of that, I never pick Kentucky over Tennessee. I just won't, because you guys, I mean, Tennessee has completely spoiled, you know, has made me sad too many times. So I do think this is where I think Tennessee football is, and it's where their fans just will not accept. Tennessee is part of a group of teams that include, I think, Kentucky, South Carolina, Mississippi State, that are sort of mid-tier programs that are a notch below the top programs in the SEC. Now, I think Tennessee's probably at the top of that list. They're probably better than those other programs, but they are not on the level of Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida. And Tennessee fans, I know that drives them crazy, because you all used to be on that level, but you're not now. So basically, for the last decade, you've been like we've been, which is, man, if we get the right roster, we can put things together, we can pull an upset, maybe we can win 9 or 10, but you can't expect to beat Georgia on the road. You just can't do it. So in that first half last week, I watched that game. Yeah, Tennessee led, but they were really lucky to have led. I mean, there was a fumble in the end zone for a touchdown on the first play, two fourth down stops. Georgia's better. It's just how it is. For this week, I think Kentucky and Tennessee are on the same tier. Tennessee's probably better. the Vols have a couple playmakers that Kentucky just doesn't have. The linebacker whose name is escaping me, but he's a huge talent. They just got some guys Kentucky doesn't have. I think Tennessee wins, but I think here's what I would say: the gap between Kentucky and Tennessee is a lot smaller than the gap between Tennessee and Georgia.
Okay, Matt, leave us with this. You gave, I thought, a really fair evaluation of Wilson, the Kentucky quarterback. You know what you're getting. They run the heck out of the ball. He's a limited passer. I know the schemes are different. Try to put that aside for a minute. Who would, if you could swap quarterbacks right now, Garantano or Wilson, who would you take?
Well, that's a great question. Probably Garantano, just because I think for Kentucky to get where they need to be, they need a quarterback that can make some explosive plays, and I think he has the ability to do that. Now, he makes a lot more errors than Terry Wilson does. And so you have to have that trade-off. So, you know, that's a great question. I think it's 6-1, half dozen the other. It's sort of like, what is your likelihood of accepting risk? I think there's a lot more variance in Garantano's play. I've seen it against Kentucky. He is a Heisman winner against Kentucky. The 3 years he's played against us, he's destroyed us. So maybe that's why I'm a little biased, probably in his direction. But I honestly think they're probably pretty close.
All right, last thing. I can't leave it alone. Who gets booed louder at Rupp? Ricky P or Billy Gillespie?
Ricky P, because Billy Gillespie, people just think Billy Gillespie's pathetic. It's not like
so they do feel sorry for him.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I feel sorry for, but they just think he's pathetic. Like Billy Gillespie is the local town kind of drunk. Like, are you going to yell at him? Like, he's Otis from Mayberry. Like, are you going to yell at the guy? Or are you just kind of like, oh, there he is. Rick is the antagonizer. You know, Rick is the dude who's like all up in your face. So, I mean, here's what's weird. There's more positive thoughts about Rick Pitino than there are Billy Gillespie, but there's also more hate. So I think Rick just brings stronger emotion either way.
Hmm. I thought maybe you'd use a Hoosiers reference for the town drunk, but you went to Otis. Okay, all right. Either way,
I'm a big Andy Griffith guy, and so you know, Billy Gillespie. Here's the thing: there is a world in which Rick Pitino comes back to Rupp one day and gets applause, but Billy Gillespie will probably never get a standing ovation. But there will be a poor Billy. Hope he's doing okay.
Interesting. I don't think you thought Billy
never
Gillespie
flipped us off. Billy
That's
never
true.
Flipped
okay.
us off. Rick flipped us off, and that's a big difference.
I don't think you used the shooter reference from Hoosiers for Dennis Hopper's character because you thought Dennis Hopper was probably a better coach than Billy Gillespie.
Oh, well, Billy was a terrible coach. But let me tell you, the 2 years of Billy Gillespie gave me some of the best comedy I've ever had in my life.
I bet it did.
Just when you didn't think it could get any weirder, it somehow did.
Matt, appreciate the visit as always. We'll talk to you down the road. Continue to be safe.
Thank you, guys.
Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio. You just made the list. Next.